The passengers raised a tremendous howl, waving their tickets and demanding their money back. And one tubby little chap cries out angrily,
"Intolerable! Fisher's Landing is on the Kentucky shore! How am I to be in Portsmouth tonight? There won't be a ferry running in this weather!"
The captain said he was sorry. The Ohio side was out of the question. The ice was thick all down the North Channel.
"But I must be in Portsmouth tonight," fumes the tubby man. "Perhaps you don't know me, Captain. Congressman Albert J. Smith, at your service. It is imperative that I support my colleague Mr. Lincoln at tonight's meeting in Portsmouth. The slave question is to be discussed."
"The slave question?" cries the captain. "Well, sir, if you were going to support the president, I couldn't land you in Ohio today. But you may land in Kentucky for me, and I hope they welcome you warmly."
And off he stumped, red in the face, leaving the little chap wattling and cursing. I didn't have to be told the captain was a southerner, but I was vastly intrigued to find my path crossing so close to Mr. Lincoln's again. That seemed to me a good reason for turning back to Cincinnati. He and his sharp eyes and embarrassing questions were the last things I wanted to meet just now. But Cassie wouldn't have it. Even landing in Kentucky was preferable to Cincinnati. She was sure there must be a ferry running at Portsmouth. But at Fisher's Landing, she hesitated at the gangplank, scanning the shore, and her steps were slow as we walked over the creaking wooden stage. Suddenly she stopped, caught my arm, and whispered,
"Let's go back. I never thought to stand on this soil again. Oh, we shouldn't have landed. Please, let's go back quickly before it's too late."
But it was too late. For the steamboat, having landed about a dozen of us, including the incensed congressman, was already backing away from the stage, her whistle whooping like a lost soul. Cassie shuddered and pulled her veil more tightly round her face. Truth to tell, I didn't care for the look of the place much myself. Just the stage and a mean little tavern and bleak, scrubby country stretching away on both sides. The other passengers crowded round the tavern, asking about a ferry, and the yokel there opined that there might be one later. The others decided to wait and see, but Cassie insisted that we should push on along the bank. We could see Portsmouth in the distance on the far shore, and it did seem there would be a better chance of a ferry there. So we set off, carrying our bags along the lonely little road that wound among the trees by the river. It was a cold, grey afternoon, with the keen wind sighing among the branches, and through the trunks the brown Ohio ran by, with the massive flows grinding and booming in the brown water. We must have walked about an hour, and it was growing darker when we came to a village. We were nearly opposite Portsmouth by now, but the river here seemed to be choked with ice, stirring and heaving, but moving only gently downstream. The keeper of the tavern that served the place laughed to scorn our inquiries about a ferry. However, in his opinion, the ice would freeze overnight. Then we could walk across. We were welcome to couch down for the night, and in the meantime, he could give us fried ham and coffee. Cassie sank down wearily on a bench.
"Oh, God, why did I set foot on this accursed shore again?"
And from somewhere down the road came the baying of hounds. Cassie started, and my own heart took a sudden leap. Then came the sound of footsteps and voices. The door was shoved open, and half a dozen or so rough fellows came in and bawled for a jug of spirits and some food. I didn't like the look of them by half. Big, tough-looking men with pistols in their belts, and two of them carrying rifles. Their leader was a tall, black-bearded villain with a broken nose who gave me a hard stare and a curt good day, and then strode to the door to curse the dogs leashed up outside. I felt Cassie sink, shuddering against me, and just caught her whisper.